Welcome to the Fast Mode podcast series. I'm Tara Neal, and with me today is Gavin Stewart, Vice President of Sales at Oculus. Oculus is a leading provider of innovative software solutions for telecommunications service providers, network operators, and other providers of voice and messaging services. The company's product portfolio includes solutions for interconnect wholesale management, retail voice management, and telecommunications fraud protection. Welcome, Gavin. Great to have you on today's episode.
Thank you for having me. It's great to be here.
Awesome. Okay, so we have a very interesting topic. We're going to talk about a specific region today, which is the Pacific Islands, right? And the topic that we're zooming in today is telecoms fraud. So how does telecoms fraud uniquely impact telcos and citizens in the Pacific Islands?
Okay, so thanks, Tara. It is a very interesting question. I think perhaps first, just to set the scene a little bit, fraud is, of course, a global issue, firstly, and a growing one. According to Interpol, the cost to society is something terrible like $3.7 trillion per year. So it's a big topic. And when we talk about telecoms fraud, useful just to think what that is. Essentially, a wide-ranging definition that covers the deliberate abuse of telecoms networks to illicitly obtain money either from another telco or from a citizen like you and me. So some of these fraud types in telecoms fraud are kind of specialist telco frauds where one telco is kind of manipulating charging with another. But more commonly, they're just the kind of general damaging frauds which impact citizens. And the telco network is essentially the battlefield on which these activities play out. Okay, and these things are getting kind of industrial in scale. A commonly known case is what they call pig butchering scams, which involve very long-term patient grooming of victims by highly skilled, highly trained human beings, and can lead to life-changing damage and loss of funds and so on. So, so fraudsters, they use all kinds of different contact methods to reach people in this way. Not all of them are telco. Some are social media, messaging apps, and so on. But one of the most effective contact methods for reaching victims is still the old-fashioned way of simply talking to somebody on a voice phone call. And, you know, generally in society, this kind of voice-based communication, it's not really something most people do much of these days. You know, we have other ways of communicating. But in fraud, it's actually a massive growth area. In Australia, for instance, the regulator reports 31% of scams are still using this channel. Similar in Singapore. And in fact, in Fiji, where they did some analysis, which is a Pacific island of some importance, 47% of these damaging scams are using the voice call contact method. Okay, so that's really just to set the scene. If we move to the Pacific Islands specifically, then, you know, firstly, this is a really interesting and unique region. You have around 20 to 25 island nations, kind of covering half the planet, maybe, with a combined population maybe only 12 to 15 million people. And they do have some vulnerabilities which are unique to them, which attract fraudsters. So the first one is simply that to terminate a call to a Pacific island is generally quite expensive, you know. So there are revenue opportunities there if you be clever and trick the system. And then a second attribute they have is that they are vulnerable to having their country code numbers, as we call them, hijacked by fraudsters. And what we mean by country codes are, you know, that each individual country has its own country code prefix. For me in the UK, it's plus 44. In the Solomon Islands, it's plus 677, and so on. And the convention says that a full phone number is usually 10 digits long. So this means there is a theoretical stock of numbers, if you will, which could be millions of numbers. The only problem is in some of these smaller islands, we don't have millions of citizens. We maybe have 30, 40, 50,000 Okay. Mm-hmm. And this means there's a big stock of what we call unallocated numbers.
Okay.
And for fraudsters, it's very easy technically for them to alter the displayed number to impersonate a Pacific island. And since this is happening a lot, a particular island may begin to get associated unfairly as a destination or origin for fraudulent traffic. And without going into too much detail, in essence, this can lead to unfair actions mm-hmm. being applied to the island, the most typical one being a kind of full blocking of traffic.
Oh.
So okay. that even the legitimate calls between the islands or from tourists home or back again, these mm-hmm. are all getting blocked, and this is obviously a major problem for them.
Mm-hmm. So they get penalized because they are associated with an increased rate of, you know, fraudulent use. And
exactly.
and I think, like you pointed out correctly, like, you know, you said 12 to 15 million. So that's like a very small population, and which results in a lot of unallocated numbers, which then, you know, basically you can just take a guess and then you'll get a number that probably is not allocated, right? So I think that opens up a lot of opportunities.
Correct.
Well, yeah, that's really interesting, you know. So what are the common types of scams that target people in this area? So, you know, is it money that they're after? Or, you know, you did mention about revenue. So, mm-hmm. and probably using their personalities, you know, to conduct some
yes.
other illegal activity. So what are the scams?
And generally money is the goal. And one mm-hmm. of the complexities of fighting telecoms fraud is a lot of the fraud scenarios mm-hmm. don't actually make any money. But then mm-hmm. when they've achieved that, they then monetize it in different ways. So it's complex.
Uh-huh.
But generally, it's mm-hmm. a question of follow the money, right?
Yes,
and
yes.
one of the biggest concerns, I think, is what we call impersonation frauds
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
or social engineering-based frauds. And mm-hmm. here, you know, victims are taken into confidence and groomed by fraudsters. And this can be a million different ways. Mm-hmm. It could be impersonation of a family member in distress. Can be romance frauds. We've even seen things like fake astrologers creating fear and terror. You know, mm-hmm. the techniques are many. And also, they're powered up and assisted by AI technologies now, which
yes.
makes them far more persuasive. So, for instance, AI can be used by fraudsters to sample the voice of a family mm-hmm. member and mimic them more accurately. It can also be used to mimic, you know, the local accent or language mm-hmm. of a small mm-hmm. island, and all these things increase the risk of a victim being drawn in. So and they have reached everywhere globally.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the other big concern as an enabler comes through the emergence of mobile banking mm-hmm. services in the Pacific region. And I mean, this is a great success story for the Pacific. It's a great innovation and delivers banking services to citizens who maybe didn't have it before. If we think about Pacific Islands, many mm-hmm. of them are quite dispersed. They have an extensive
yep.
archipelago of islands.
Yes, yes.
And, you know, visiting a traditional bank
yes.
might be a day off work and a few boat rides
yes.
and so on. So mobile
yeah, I can
banking,
imagine that. Yes.
Indeed, and this is the reality. You know, some of them are covering huge geographic areas just mm-hmm. as one country. So this is generally a good thing. However, the coming of mobile banking, of course, attracts the scammers
mm-hmm.
because it makes it easier for the victim to transfer funds electronically.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And also, since mobile banking is rather new, you know, the consumer protection laws and regulations, they may not yet be fully mature.
Mm-hmm.
So wherever mobile banking is, the fraudsters will follow, unfortunately.
Mm-hmm. And so, you know, you talked about the fraudsters trying to impersonate, a known person, and then how they are using AI to do that, to facilitate that so that they get the context right for this. Okay, so that's one thing. So, you know, these kind of scams, right? Do we know who's behind this, or is it a particular group of people who target, or is it just random group of threat actors who zoom into these activities?
Good question. And it's everywhere, really. So in a given country, there will be nationally located fraudsters and scammers. Mm-hmm. Someone in the next town tricking someone, cheating someone, selling something online and then not delivering it. Generally, these are things over which, you know, legal processes can have jurisdiction. So if I do it in my country, then I'm probably going to get a knock on the door from the local police. Okay. Mm-hmm. The more damaging fraud bad actors generally are located in another country.
Okay.
So of the most damaging fraud is really originating overseas, because what can we do? We can't send our UK police force to go to Cambodia or Singapore, wherever it's come from, you know. Mm-hmm. So generally it's originating abroad. And certainly in the last 5 years or so, these operations have really become industrialized in a rather sinister way, involved with people trafficking and even kind of scam training compounds where people are tricked into going to them, perhaps with the promise of a new life or a new job, and held against their will and forced to actually execute these scams. They're highly trained and they're told you can't leave unless you actually do all this. So it's highly industrialized and generating enormous amounts of revenue now, and a serious business. It's no longer a homemade activity.
And I guess, you know, the gaps that we see in particular regions, like, for example, in this region, I suppose that even telecom operators would not really have the expertise or, you know, the access to the kind of solutions to put this in place, because it's a smaller region and fewer users. So we know the kind of spending or expenditure that goes into these kind of solutions, right? So I guess that itself creates the incentive for threat actors to zoom into these kind of regions, and maybe other regions, other regions where they see similar gaps, right, where fewer people and the telcos are not really, you know, that evolved and so forth. So which makes it like basically easier for them to execute the fraud that you've just mentioned.
Exactly right, and actually this is a true globally. If you go to even large operators in larger countries, they don't always have a huge anti-fraud department.
Oh, there's okay.
Not always a lot of people volunteering for this. You know, the question of liability is an interesting one as well, because a telco may say, well, look, this is nothing to do with me.
Oh, yes.
But from a consumer point of view, they say, yes, but it happened on your network. I answered this guy on my device. You should protect me. And then they may look to regulatory or law enforcement to see what are my rights and so on. So it's a bit of a mishmash and takes time. What is true, I think, in Pacific Islands is, you know, they are law-abiding countries. They're proud nations. They offer excellent services, you know, universal service to their customers. Even though they are small, their citizens want all the same telco services like everyone else has, mobile banking, 5G, smart cities, data, and so on. You know, and the telcos have, especially the in a kind of incumbent country telco, they feel like they have a sort of national responsibility to do things properly. It's not just a business.
Okay, okay. All right, great. I think, pivoting to another area. So we see that, you know, we talked about the fraud and the perpetrators and stuff and you know, the techniques being used. So, and we know what telcos would probably do. And one of them is like, you know, country code blocking. So like what we talked about, you know, penalize, you know, a particular country or region because higher rate of scams originating from these places. So which you pointed out earlier can actually cut off entire communities, right? So we don't want that. So how can telcos address this, tackle this fraud at the same time balancing, you know, making sure there's access and there's everyone can still communicate and enjoy the benefits of modern communications?
Yeah. So really, when we talk about blocking, we have to think of it not as a big stick. It's we don't want to turn on and off the whole traffic to a country. We need tools which allow us to be much more precise. And as always in counter fraud, the trick is to only block the bad stuff, but let the good stuff through.
Exactly.
Because as soon as a legitimate call is blocked, then someone rings up and complains, I couldn't ring my auntie, right? So on.
Yeah.
So the technical tools are available to do this. For country code blockings, there are some really simple things that can be done. For instance, the operators or carriers who are sending the traffic can easily check the validity of the numbers they're carrying. It may look like a Solomon Island number because it has the prefix, but is it actually allocated and live to a real person? These are checks that they can carry out. And for the island operators receiving the traffic, they can also implement tools to kind of share their active numbers with the wider telco community. And they can say, you know, look, these are our real numbers here, and there's 28,000 of them. Anything else which allegedly looks like one of my numbers, please block it, but don't block everything, you know. The answer comes down to better granularity, as we call it, of blocking, so we can be more precise in our actions.
So that would require proactiveness, you know, by the telcos on both ends, right? The country that receives, or, you know, and as well as the country where the calls originate or where the perpetrators are. So everyone has to be proactive, like what you said, submit all the numbers and update them, you know, from time to time.
Exactly. And this comes to the question of collaboration between operators, where they are used to collaborating to fight fraud. There are informal groups where operators will share intelligence with each others. The GSMA does a lot of good work here, and so on. So the concept of collaboration is very valid in fraud. We just have to create a landscape where people feel comfortable to do that, and they can, you know, they can share data collaboratively without infringing things like privacy laws or disclosing information which could be commercially useful to their competitors. But collaboration, a big part of fighting fraud effectively.
Awesome. Okay, so how's the regulatory landscape evolving for telcos in the Pacific Islands? And what pressures are operators facing when it comes to compliance and customer protection?
Okay, so in generally, the trend worldwide is regulators like to kind of be a little bit hands-off in matters like this and let the operators and the telcos figure out the solutions. I'd say in the last 5 years in other markets, they've moved beyond that. So national regulators in Europe, UK, US, parts of Middle East and Asia have become much more active, mandating that the telcos must do more to protect their consumers and issuing regulations. Has that spread to the Pacific Islands? Not massively yet. I mean, for Pacific Islands, they're a little bit constrained. Simply, you know, they're not huge populations. There's not really always resources to have a strong or active or expert regulator, but they do have them, of course. And most of the islands have more than one telco as well. There is competition, you know, so they're, they're kind of developing markets. However, it is coming, and what we've seen in Fiji, for instance, is a new initiative in this last year led by FCCC, which is the Fijian Consumer and Competition Council, I think, also backed by the telecoms regulator, for them to say, right, we have to take action. You know, this is harming our citizens. They launched an anti-scam initiative there in Fiji. And Fiji, definitely as one of the larger islands, the more developed economies, seen as a bit of a regional leader and influencer. So they are the first so far, but we expect that will spread. But, you know, the pressure telcos are under from regulator, you don't have to be ordered by the regulator to do the right thing, you know. And this is where Pacific Islands can benefit. You know, they they're able to access things which have been done in other markets, which are tried and tested, and see what works and what doesn't, and say, well, look, let's implement this, not because we've been ordered to, but simply because it works.
And at the same time, I guess the regulators have all the interests, you know, for the reputation of the nation, for example, you know, to basically push this or support this, right? And incentivize perhaps telcos to implement the solutions.
Exactly. You know, they have varying levels of legal control to do this. But as mentioned, Pacific Islands are generally very law-abiding nations with proud citizenry, proud of their nation and want to do the right things.
Okay. So I think, we have another question. And this is on AI. I mean, you described at the beginning, you know, how AI can be used by fraudsters to basically help them with you know, whatever maneuvers that they are doing. So, you know, how can telcos use AI now to mitigate this fraud? Because AI works both ways. And at the same time, you know, balance automation with human intervention.
Yeah, thank you. Great question. So as you mentioned, AI is a big bonus for the fraudsters as well. We have to fight fire with fire. Mm-hmm. We have to have it ourselves. And, you know, in counter-fraud activities, AI is very useful. I mean, basically, the starting point is we have to crunch huge amounts of data very quickly to identify patterns, identify variances from patterns, get insights extremely quickly, spot things which never happened. So for that part, the kind of processing part, you know, human beings could do this manually, but it would take weeks or months and it's too late. We've missed the problem. However, human beings, they do fit in a really key way, which is the application of judgment and imagination and, you know, things which AI is not so strong at. And in this part, you know, it's an interesting question, what is fraud? Because telco fraud, it's not a black and white world. Some frauds you'll go to jail for. Others, it's just a kind of commercial abuse, maybe between negligent or willing parties, you know, and a whole spectrum in between. So it's not as easy as saying, bang, you know, this is a fraud. So telcos generally do have skilled fraud managers who are able to review cases and confirm and understand what happened and feed that back into the process, okay? And I don't think that will ever be replaced, okay? And also they can anticipate what the fraudsters are going to do next because they're always mutating their attacks. The human intervention, it's also relevant from a governance point of view because we do see regulations emerging now to try and control AI. In the EU, for instance, the AI Act is live now. It has a very low profile. I don't know why, but it's an important bit of legislation. And this requires certain things, one of which is that human oversight is in place for any decisions made by a technical system which could affect a citizen. So if I was a citizen and I felt unfairly affected by some decision, I can raise a complaint, raise a case through this. The enterprise has to respond and explain how it arrived at that decision. And it's not adequate to just say, we don't know, the AI did it, you know. Human intervention as well, it's relevant for effective counter-fraud, but also it's really important to ensure compliance with regulations like this and also with privacy and so on. These are things which telcos have to keep in a balance because there are all kinds of things we could do technically to help us fight fraud, but in doing so, we might infringe privacy rights or data protection rights, and all of this stuff has to be balanced somehow.
So we have to basically have the right people and the right tools and technology.
Exactly right.
So, well, let's zoom into Oculus. All right. So you guys are in this area, specializing in, you know, protecting the, you know, customers from fraud as well as telcos. Okay. So how can you guys help telcos address fraud and what solutions do you offer in this space?
Small question with a big answer, but I'll try to summarize it as best I can. We offer a wide range of software application solutions, basically to help telcos identify fraud, validate that it is a true fraud, and mitigate the attacks by applying a response, a control. A key focus is speed of detection. We want to do it as fast as possible because the longer the attack goes on, the more the damage. And another key focus, I would say, is automation capability. Because, you know, the fraudsters are not going home after 5 p.m. They're operating 24/7. They're targeting Friday nights, weekends, public holidays, and so on. So we need automation to ensure that everything is being monitored and managed accordingly. And so, in broad terms, what we do is, you know, we have real-time tools which are basically monitoring the traffic moving across a telco's network in real time, looking for unusual, unexpected, undesirable incidents, looking for things which we already recognize as a fraud fingerprint and so on. And how we do this, we look at firstly the numbers themselves, so the country codes and the numbers. There's a lot of intelligence just from what numbers we're seeing. Okay. Next, from the behavior of the traffic, as we call it, the whole analytics part, is what we're seeing normal? Is it normal for us on a Tuesday afternoon? Have we ever seen this before? Is this kind of traffic occurrence anything that a human being could possibly do? No, you know, things like this. So we call it the behavior of the traffic. And then the last metric, I guess, is the commercial aspect, because every single telecoms event has a cost and a revenue on it. And we can monitor this side. And in itself, that might be the trigger for our attention. If we see a lot of very lucrative looking traffic with a high revenue to it, then are we going to get paid? You know, we have to think about this. So that might be another trigger for us to look very, very closely. And then finally, you know, once something fraudulent has been identified, our solutions provide links to automated responses, or can be manual, of course, a variety of responses, sometimes just to alert me, sometimes to play a message. In some countries, we offer the consumer, are you sure you want to proceed with this call, and so on. But most commonly, the response is to stop it, blocking, as we call it. And we want to block this from happening as soon as possible before it can do more damage.
Okay. Wow. So, you know, so these the actions that you take basically are built into the solution. You know, basically telcos can just, you know, configure so that, you know, once they see any of the anomalies or irregularities in traffic flow, and they can basically just automate these actions, right? And can they configure their own custom actions? You know, like probably label a call as this can be a beware scammer call or something like that, right? So carry on.
Sorry, because and the solution has to be flexible like this, because different operators have their own preference, how they want to handle it. Different countries, the regulator might mandate a response. In some countries, it's not allowed to block. In others, we have to send an advisory and so on, you know. So, yeah, the solution is flexible, and it offers this automation possibility. We studied our customer base and found that after around 9 or 12 months using the system, 80% of the customers are using it in a fully automated fashion. But we know they're not going to do that from day one, because they have to learn the solution. We don't want to have block the wrong thing by accident. So it's very flexible like that. You don't have to have the automation. The solution can also offer a kind of blocking recommendation. And then, especially if it's a larger telco, they may have a skilled network team who simply receive this, and they're the ones with the authority to do a blocking. So they press the button and so on. So it's flexible in terms of supporting different workflows. But the ultimate is if it's working well enough and trusted enough that the whole cycle can be automated, and then simply the system user or fraud manager will come in on a Monday morning, see what happened over the weekend. Oh, wow, great, we blocked that. And then maybe he can release the block or try again or see what happens and start another week.
Wow. So you guys must be training on a lot of data, you know, a lot of traffic data, right, to basically figure out the patterns that may indicate certain type of behavior. So is there an extensive R&D going on even as we speak? You know, because new threat patterns, I mean, new patterns of usage may emerge, and new type of scams will emerge with that, right? So do you have an ongoing thing?
We do, yeah. So, and our customers help us here. So within within the system, if you opened it up, you'd see there's a section we call the scenarios engine. And this is really the brain of the system. And here we have listed all the different kind of fraud attack types that are active and that we're looking for. And a lot of these have a known profile.
Okay.
For instance, if we see a very high volume of calls being sent somewhere and then not even connecting, you know, this is something we know as a Wangiri attack, designed to try and trick me to call back. You know, so on the one hand, we have already known profiles. We load them for customers, but the customer can edit them because they have their own fine tuning, or maybe they're only studying certain destinations or locations, whatever suits their business. Okay. But of course, as you say, new stuff is always happening. And that's where for us the AI part comes in. And that part is what we call our anomaly engine, where we see something unusual that we've never observed before. We've never seen it on your network. We don't know what it is, but it doesn't look like normal behavior of one citizen calling another or messaging another. So the AI spots this. It's outside tolerance of what is expected. And then this will automatically form a case for the fraud manager to study further. And from that, usually they'll generate a scenario. They'll say, ah, we see what they were doing here. We can block it.
Wow, that's amazing, isn't it? You know how AI comes in all angles, you know, from helping fraudsters to basically being a tool, and at the same time, you know, finding out the patterns and you know, uncovering whatever all the
Exactly right,
malicious,
yeah. And
all the malicious activities that are taking place,
exactly,
right?
and it's able to find the subtler patterns.
Yes,
Okay,
exactly.
so if we think about the recognized scenarios, I talked about this Wangiri, for instance. Sometimes people think of this as a kind of rules-based approach. If you have a rules-based approach, great, if what happens ticks the rule. But what if it just slightly missed the rule, right? Then it gets through. The AI is very good at detecting the subtle margins where something didn't quite trigger a known threshold or a known rule, but using my super brain, I think this is suspicious. Please
Yes, this,
investigate.
yes, there's something going, something fishy there, right?
Exactly.
Okay, well, amazing, Gavin. I think this has been a really interesting session. So, and we are at the end of it. So, thank you so much for joining us today, and you know, for sharing, you know, all the different types of scams, and in particular, you know, the peculiarities in certain regions like Pacific Islands, and how Oculus is addressing them.
My pleasure. As they say in Fiji, vinaka vakalevu. I'm afraid there's many other greetings in the Pacific. I don't know them all. But thank you for your time. It was really, really interesting.
Awesome. And to everyone tuning in, thank you guys for listening. If you want to learn more, visit www.oculus.com and follow us for more updates and insights as we continue to uncover the latest in technology and telecoms. See you in our next session. Bye-bye.